Stop. Stop. Will you stop, Dave? Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid. Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
Here we are back again. It's Monday night. It's the Hour of Truth. The drones didn't come this week, so we made it back to you, fair listeners. As you know, we've been talking on and on and on about Article 5 of the United States Constitution and an amendment convention. We've pointed you to Mark Levin's book, The Liberty Amendments. Great book. We're glad to see Mark Levin on board with this. He himself said this week that he is a recent convert to the idea of an amendment convention. He didn't like the idea before. So welcome aboard, Mark. We've been on this bandwagon for about 3 years now, hard and heavy. Been talking lightly about it for 4 or 5 years. Back when we wanted to talk about balanced budgets and changes in the tax code. We have with us tonight, though, a great friend, a true patriot, and one of my idols, Lloyd Sloan. How are you, Lloyd?
Oh my goodness, Dave! It's great to be on with you again. And I thought somebody else was on the line here for a second with that introduction. So very gracious. Wow, that's cool. Maybe Mark Levin is going to join us.
I wouldn't call Mark one of my idols by any means, but I do like him. I do like him. I like his wit. Man, he's a super intelligent guy. Although yeah. he's a little misdirected at times, in my mind. But
like most talk show hosts, he does not suffer from any lack of ego. So.
No, there you go. There you go.
I did read his book too, and I'm glad you actually started with him because I think he's pushed the ball forward. I would say on balance, that book's definitely a positive. I think it's a good first step forward, and he's not afraid of an Amendment 5. An Article 5 Amendment Convention, and I think that's good. You know,
right.
I think that it may come to that. So. You know, none of us need to really be afraid of it. It's in the Constitution.
Absolutely. And listen, callers, 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. Take advantage of the fact that Lloyd is here, because what we're going to talk about tonight, Lloyd is the absolute expert on. But Lloyd, as you pointed out today, Mark Levin's book, and I just read it this week as well, last week, he actually details some of the amendments that he'd like to see. Term limits for Congress. He wants to repeal 17, which is the direct election of senators. He wants term limits for the Supreme Court justices, which is something I've been in favor of for some time. Now, I am just recently a convert to term limits for senators and representatives. I always, the libertarian in me always was opposed to that. Thinking, when I get a good guy up there, the last thing I want is the government telling me I can't vote for him. But man, it's gone over the limit. It really has. And, I'm a convert to that.
There's 11 amendments in the book. I'm working on a review of it now. I can tell you that that's the first amendment that Levin proposes in his book is the term limits. He proposes a 12-year lifetime limit in Congress. Interestingly enough, he would make it retroactive, which I found that probably was the most appealing part of his amendment.
Exactly. Yeah.
He's going to clean house real fast. Anybody that's been over there, been there more than 12 years is gone. So he's going to get them out.
Yeah, they get to they get to finish the term they're in, and then they're finished, according to his proposed amendment.
I give term limit amendments, I give this amendment a D grade. It's passing, but I think it barely is. I'm kind of with you. This is a very popular idea, and I'm well aware of how popular it is, mostly because Americans are frustrated. They keep, for whatever reason, we seem to have trouble voting these guys out. We have, and I think part of it's gerrymandering people, and part of it is there's kind of a wealthy, privileged few that do dominate our elections. So even when they do get voted out, it's very difficult to get an incumbent out of there, generally replaced by the same thing. There's no massive changes that take place.
Right.
I would say, I mean, the argument for term limits to me, and I don't think they're a bad idea, I just don't think they're going to solve the problem. I view them as treating the symptoms, really, not really going after the disease. We should consider that when we did presidential term limits, and I certainly support presidential term limits. I don't want to see more than two terms. But did it really solve the problem? I mean, the presidency has never been more out of control than it is today. If anything, it's gotten worse. I don't think term limits made it worse, but I do think, you know, you've got to really look at the underlying problem in the election system, try and solve that. That's why I gave him a D on that. It's just kind of, yeah, we can do it. But if that is the only thing we pass, we have failed miserably. Really.
Oh, I agree. I agree 100% with that.
And I would definitely not risk an amendment convention. An amendment convention is a risky thing. I'll grant that, too. And I certainly wouldn't risk it just for something like term limits. I mean, we need more meat than that. I found three of Levin's amendments. I don't know if you've read the book yet or not.
I have read the book just last week, yeah.
I mean, the amendments that I liked, I can tell you, I found three of his 11 that I gave an A grade to, and so I probably focus on those. The first was a limitation on federal taxation that is absolutely needed. He has a fascinating idea to cap personal and corporate taxation at 15% of income. That's an interesting proposal. He would hold elections one day after tax deadlines, which is an interesting thing to do. And he wants to get rid of all the sales, all the VAT, and all the death taxes, which is also interesting. This amendment needs serious improvement, in my opinion, but he is definitely on the right track that we do need to limit federal taxation. It is out of control. And so I would hope we'd all come together under that banner. The idea that I like on taxation comes from Patrick Henry. It comes from the way that we used to do taxation under the Articles of Confederation. It was one of the ideas that was proposed for the Bill of Rights and got left out, and it's too bad. But the basic idea is that the federal government would not tax individuals, certainly not in time of peace, but would instead tax the states. And so the states would figure out how they want to tax, and then the feds would just take a cut of it. So maybe 20% of our revenues in Missouri, or maybe as high as 30%, I'm not sure the number, but it would go to the federal government. And we would eliminate the IRS, we would eliminate all federal taxation. It would come by taxing state governments. That's kind of a cool idea, I think. So that's better than Levin's idea, but I gave him an A grade there because – if nothing else, he's exactly correct. This taxation problem, we've got to get a handle on, and we need an amendment to do it. This can't be done without an amendment because of the 16th Amendment that's out there. There's too much power right now granted to the feds that needs to be stopped. Yeah.
Okay, and avoiding Levin's number 9, which is what we're going to spend the bulk of tonight on, what other one did you give an A grade?
I gave an A grade to number 10, which is close to our beloved state repeal amendment idea.
Oh, absolutely.
So let's get into that one. Number 10 on Levin's chart is to grant the states authority to check Congress. Levin's idea is that 3/5 of the states could veto Congress, and they could also veto a federal regulation that's worth more than $100 million. So that's in there, too. He puts a 2-year time limit on that veto. But he does transfer then power out to the states to say, when Congress passes something, you guys in the states, if you can get 3/5 of you, then you can veto what Congress just did. And you get a 2-year time limit and you can do it. He's going the right direction. He understands that the basic problem here is that the feds cannot be the final word. We've got to have some way for the states to have a check again in the system. And so that's a direct check on Congress from the states, at least from three-fifths of them. Good idea. I think that Levin needed to do a little bit more research. I'm not sure he doesn't mention at all the repeal amendment idea, which was already out there before he wrote a book on it. That was a better idea, in my opinion, than the veto idea. It has no time limit on it, and it lets states not just veto the whole thing, but they can repeal parts of it. And they can repeal, you know, they might go into Obamacare and say, well, we don't like this and we don't like this part, but we're okay with this part, so we're going to carve out what we don't like and repeal that, and there's going to not be any time limit on it. That's a much more powerful approach, in my opinion, than the Levin approach. And so I prefer the repeal amendment, but that was a two-thirds of states, which is too high. Even the three-fifths, these people have the wrong formula. And they keep focusing on the number of states. What you have to do is have a representative majority of states. That's more complex. And that means you get a majority of states, but you must also make sure those states represent a majority of the American people. That's the right formula. That then mirrors Congress out at the state level. And I think that's really the formula of the founders, basically. It's the formula that we use for Congress. I believe it's the right one. And neither Levin nor Randy Barnett have found that formula yet. And that, you know, I strongly believe that's the right formula.
Okay, we're going to come back, like I say, and spend the bulk of the evening talking about the state repeal amendment. But how about this amendment where any bill proposed has to be made public in its entirety 30 days before it can be voted on?
Yeah, I did see that in there, and that's also part of his veto amendment thing, his number 10,
right,
granting the states authority. To me, that's a good reform. I don't mind it. He does allow a two-thirds override, so if they needed to get something done before the 30 days, you know, it had to get done fast, they could still do it with a two-thirds vote. I think that's a good rule for Congress to put in. I don't think it requires a constitutional amendment. I think they can just make it a rule. I personally, my favorite rule was that every single bill that passes Congress must be read on the floor of Congress before it can be voted. That,
right,
that accomplishes many purposes. And, you know, most of these bills are 2,000 pages. My word, if you tried to read Obamacare on the floor in the House of the Senate, I mean, it would literally take you over a month.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that would accomplish Levin's purpose, but it would also accomplish another great purpose. It would shorten the lengths of the bills, okay, which I also prefer. So there are other reforms that, again, I think are better than Levin's, but there's certainly nothing wrong with having a 30-day public notice. I mean, my goodness, most municipalities do that. Most small governments do that now, local governments. That's very typical. We do that in St. Louis County. I think it's a very good rule. You know, you should have a public reading, at least one meeting prior to having a public vote on the thing. And that way everybody can see it and there's time to reflect on it and get experts to come in and talk about it. I mean, how many times has our Congress voted on bills they didn't even know what they were voting on?
Yeah.
This is inexcusable, frankly. I mean, and we're expected to obey these laws and you clowns haven't even read them?
Exactly. And again, Obamacare, you know, we have to pass it to find out what's in it. So let me guess. Let me just take a guess now at what your third A was. And your third A is probably number 7.
Mine is number 9. But I believe that it is. Now, number 9 is going to be very abstract for people. And then we can get to number 7, too. Unfortunately, I gave that one a D, so we better get to that. Yeah. I gave. I will tell you right now, I gave 3 A's, 3 C's, 3 D's, and 2 F's. So that was my grading. Yeah, that was my grading. I guess I'm a hard grader. But number 9 was to change the way that we amend the Constitution so that states could do it directly.
Exactly.
And I think that's an excellent idea. I think that is absolutely needed. That restores the authority of the Constitution. that it comes from we the people. And really, the closest thing we can get to the people is the states. The states are more representative of the people simply because there's more of them, and we've had this discussion many times, but the states are the way that the people speak. And so we need to let the states be able to amend this without any approval from Congress. He puts a six-year time limit on it, which I think is not a bad idea. I really do think there should be a time limit on these things. The founders didn't put one in.
When you say six-year time limit now, just for the listeners, you're talking about 6 years for the states to ratify a proposed amendment.
That is correct. You would have
right.
6 years to ratify whatever amendment any particular state started. He does not allow states to rescind during that period, so they can't. There's no take-backs. Okay.
Right.
You know, once you've ratified, you're done. You can't take it back. I'm not sure that's a good idea, but again, this can all be debated. Whatever his reasoning, that's what he's decided to do. He has a two-thirds instead of a three-fourths threshold. That's a little bit closer. I think three-fourths has been too high. Part of our problem, in my opinion, in the country, because we made it so hard to amend the Constitution, I mean, that's kind of good because our amendments were certainly, you know, arguably better amendments for that reason. They had to reach a very high quality and a lot of approval. But at the same time, because it's so hard, we cheat now and use the Supreme Court to amend the Constitution. And we've that's very bad, people. And
yeah.
So I think if we got a better formula for amending, state constitutions are not done this way. State constitutions typically just go to a vote of the people, and that's how we amend them. Generally majority vote, you know, it's just hard to get them started and get them through the process. I don't necessarily want to send constitutional amendments to the vote of people, but that's something we could consider as well. It certainly would get it closer to that general consensus that we want. My problem with two-thirds of states is that technically if you take the smallest two-thirds of states, you're only about 40% of the American people. That's dangerous, too. You don't want to be passing amendments that, in theory, only 40% of the people would approve of. Not a good idea. But he is absolutely correct, so I gave him an A because he's getting there on this one. I think he's getting close. We do need to change this amendment process, and we definitely have to get Congress out of it. They should not be the ones proposing this stuff. It should come from outside Congress.
Okay, what did you have against 7?
Seven. That's not, you know, I believe that no amendment, that's the promote free enterprise, and
right.
He basically rewrites the Commerce Clause. Again, when he rewrote the Commerce Clause, I totally agreed with what he wrote. He's basically saying, look, interstate commerce is solely there to prevent states from hindering commerce with each other, and he's
right.
Correct. That is no doubt that that was the original intent of that clause. And it is also true, and he makes it crystal clear in his amendment, anything that happens within a state, and that's all it is within that state, it is completely outside federal commerce powers, period.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And my problem with this is that technically the Constitution is, that's what it already says, in my opinion. I realize people don't think that's what it says, but that really is the original intent of the Commerce Clause, and we simply have drifted. And I'm always uncomfortable amending the Constitution where arguably the Constitution is not the problem. The problem is us because we have misinterpreted it. So I would focus instead on getting that right interpretation back into the courts and the judges and people's minds rather than an amendment. I'm not saying it's the wrong idea. I mean, maybe we need to do it now to reinforce it. But my general approach would be to hold this one back and try and get back on the original meaning of the Constitution and get people to understand it better rather than amend. I don't have any problem with his language. I think his language is good. I think it's what the Commerce Clause is supposed to mean and originally meant, so I have no issue with him there either. D is maybe a harsh grade, but it's passing. It's passing, okay? But this is a low priority for me, okay?
Okay, I want you folks to go out and buy Levin's book because I think it's a good read. I think it's really a necessary read if we're going to continue with this discussion of Article 5 week after week here. You'll find some things in there you agree with. You'll find some things in there you don't agree with. But Lloyd and I mean, for the sake of not robbing a poor Mark of his livelihood, we're not going to go through the entire book tonight. Lloyd, what are your top two amendments that Levin did not mention that you would like to see?
Oh, yeah, that's a good – you know, and I will piggyback off him because, you know, some of the amendments that I'm thinking of do piggyback off Levin's, all right? Because,
right.
You know, they kind of – but, okay, let me take the first one. He has an amendment to limit federal spending. All right, I'm okay with that. What I would rather see is an amendment, not so much – I believe I need to get an amendment that controls the war powers and makes them more clear than they are now because they're being abused, and also that puts restrictions on this Federal Reserve System and paper money. We've got to come.
Oh, yeah.
You know, to me, that's more important than spending most of the balanced budget people, and that's really a balanced budget amendment. So his number four is essentially a balanced budget amendment.
Right.
That has a little bit more. He caps federal spending at 17.5% of GDP.
Right.
That's, you know, things like that. I would rather see an amendment that would restrict Federal Reserve powers and paper money powers. I'm not necessarily going to get rid of paper money, but I don't want to see any more where a private bank like – or I'll say a secret bank, because it's not entirely private, but this secret privileged agency, the Federal Reserve, can print money at will. No way. I mean, that has got to be curbed. I don't think we should ever be printing any more money unless Congress specifically approves it, and it must go to a vote in Congress. Maybe even have a 3/5 vote for that or something. You know, make that tough to do, because that definitely erodes the value of the currency for everybody. So I prefer those kind of limitations to what he's talking about, but that's one that I'd like to see.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if you were in tune here a couple of weeks ago, but I was talking to a guy who thought we just ought to just print money to no taxes for anybody. We just print money to pay all the government's bills.
Well, mm-hmm. And they tried that in the Weimar Republic in Germany. How did that work
yeah.
out?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, well, you could do it if you had a small government. Let's say if your government was maybe 2 or 3% of GDP. I think you could get away with that and have stable prices. As long as the economy is growing by about 2 and 3% a year, I think you can safely increase the money supply by that same amount and then not have any taxes, just go ahead and print money. But because the economy is growing, your prices remain stable, basically. So, you know, that's another way you could approach it.
Well, I don't favor that at all. Now, I'll tell you what amendment that he didn't include that I would like to see included, and we've started working on something like this at the state level. And that is a recall of senators and representatives.
Mm-hmm.
The states have been put on notice that would be challenged in the Supreme Court by the United States Congress if they ever tried it. There are currently 12 states that have the ability in their state constitution have a provision to recall senators and representatives. It's never been tried. Because I think everyone's afraid of the Congress and the Supreme Court. Yeah.
That's a good provision. That was lost, incidentally, at the Articles of Confederation again, because
yeah.
It used to be states could recall, and then the Constitution got rid of that, and I think it's definitely the wrong thing to do. We'd be far better off if we could recall these people at the state level, and that would again be a transfer of power back to the states, which is what's needed as a general prescription for this patient, right? Levin does suggest repealing the 17th Amendment.
Yes.
And when he suggests that, he does, if you check his language, he does allow the removal then of senators by a 2/3 vote of the state legislature.
Of the legislature, yes. So, but then at that point, the senators work for the state legislator, and
Not yet. I mean, he still has. He needs to go further out on this. You're thinking along the right lines. That's what I would do too.
Yeah.
I would go back to the way it was under the Articles of Confederation. If we're going to do this, if we're really going to look at how we pick senators and change it, then I would go all the way back to the way it was under the Articles of Confederation. I would change the Senate so that it is one state, one vote. Every state gets one vote in the Senate. That's it. I don't care how many senators you send. You can send two. You can send one. You can send five. Maybe you shouldn't send more than 10, but the truth is those senators are going to be paid by the state, not by the federal government. They work
right
for the state directly. And frankly, the state can recall them at any time.
Yes.
For any reason. So if the state doesn't like what that group is doing, they can kick one. They can pull one back, send another person there. The state is in they are truly just agents of the state. They are delegates of the state. And I like that a lot better. Yeah, I would go that far. Our Senate would then clearly represent the states. There's just no doubt
right
about what its function would be. You know,
and that's fine. And that's
agree
fine because the people have direct representation in the other house. I mean, there's no quarreling about the fact that they have direct and better representation because the numbers per representative are better.
Yeah, in fact, what we really need to look at is why even have a Senate. If we're not going to have the Senate represent the states, as was the original framework, then I'd just soon get rid of the Senate completely.
Right.
It doesn't have much function, really. It's just another way to elect people, and they basically are the same. They represent the same thing. It's a little bit more balanced because a state like Wyoming has the same votes as California. But is that really a great idea? I don't know. I mean, not anymore. It's not the same thing, so I think I would prefer, if we're going to have a Senate, it's going to represent states, then let's really do it right. And what we've got now is too much of a hybrid. You know who the Senate really represents? Millionaires.
Well,
I mean,
yeah,
they do a great job of representing the richest people in America. That is, they're a country club, basically.
And ConAgra and Monsanto.
Yes, Monsanto has a representative. For sure, you know, I'm sure Boeing has one or two,
yeah,
you know, that's who, yeah, Disney, I'm sure has a couple, you know, that's who gets represented in the U.S. Senate now. I'd rather that it be state legislatures doing it again. And, you know, it's worth debating. I gave that one a C. I'm like, it's definitely passing. I don't consider it the number one idea, but it is a good idea. You know, I'm okay with it. So,
all right, we're going to go pay some bills here, and when we come back, Lloyd and I are going to jump right into what we're here for tonight, and that is the state repeal amendment, Madison's hidden amendment. All you folks need to go to barnesandnoble.com or amazon.com. I'm pushing someone else's work here tonight. Mark Levin's book is a must-read, in my opinion. For anybody who's liberty-minded, you'll find some things in there you like, you'll find some things in there you don't like, but you need to read it. It's called The Liberty Amendments, or just drive down to Barnes & Noble, sit in one of those nice, big, fluffy chairs, and give it a peruse and see if it's not something you'd like to buy. We're going to come back after this break. We're going to talk about SRA with SRA expert Lloyd Sloan.
They told me that you had gone totally insane. And that your methods were unsound.
Are my methods unsound?
I don't see any method at all.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
There's a conflict in every human heart between the rational and the irrational, between good and evil. Good does not always triumph. Sometimes the dark side overcomes what Lincoln called the better angels of our nature.
All right, we're back. We're going to talk about the state repeal amendment, Madison's Lost Amendment, with SRA expert, a guy who's been studying SRA for years. We had Lloyd on about a year and a half ago now talking about SRA, and it's time to revisit that, especially now that we're dedicating these Monday nights on the Hour of Truth to Article 5 and trying to get that ball rolling. Lloyd Sloan, why do we call this Madison's Lost Amendment? Give us a little history.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know how much people will remember of this history. I guess we start the subject with in 1798, the federal government passed the Alien and Sedition Acts. I'm sure we all remember those, but they were actually locking people in prison for criticizing the president or any government official, and journalists or newspaper people were going to jail for that. Jefferson and Madison are up in arms and basically view it as blatantly unconstitutional. Of course, federal courts said it was fine, and here we go. Well, they wrote the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions that basically said, we in Virginia and Kentucky think these things are against the Constitution. What do you other states think? It didn't go very far after that, and when Jefferson got elected in 1800, that kind of put the – it solved the problem, let's put it that way. So they got rid of those unconstitutional acts, what we today would certainly consider unconstitutional, and problem solved. If we fast forward to around 1830 – and South Carolina, relying on these earlier resolutions, decides that they are going to nullify a tariff that John C. Calhoun considers way too high. Now, Andrew Jackson starts putting troops on the border, and you've got what's called the South Carolina nullification crisis brewing. And Calhoun refers back to James Madison saying, well, Madison did it. Look at his Virginia resolutions. He nullified a federal law. And Madison, a year from death, basically says, no, not true. We did not technically nullify that law. In fact, there was a man who even went to prison in Virginia named James Callender. We did strongly object to the law, but we didn't try and nullify the federal law. Madison, however, does recognize a problem, which even he noticed in 1798. The problem is this. No one is a fair judge in their own case. That's fairly obvious. So if we have a dispute between the two of us, you certainly cannot be the judge, nor can I, as to which of us is right or wrong. When we get down to constitutional issues and the federal government is accused of having broken the Constitution, they're violating it, who do we let decide that? We take it to the Supreme Court. That's the federal government itself deciding its own case. That is a deep problem in our history. Madison knew it, and so did Jefferson back in 1798. They knew federal government cannot be the final judge here. And we have struggled with this idea, who can be that final judge? Who can decide whether or not the federal government broke this Constitution? Madison at that point says, we need an amendment. We need an amendment so that the states can be that final judge, and so that it's easier for them. And that's really the genesis of state repeal amendment, and it's why I call it Madison's Lost Amendment. It was a proposal of his in response to John C. Calhoun back in the 1830s. You can read his notes on nullification. That is really the origin of this particular idea.
And so you've mentioned nullification a couple of times. You suggest that nullification is a bad way to go.
We probably have to qualify that too. In the sense, what I really mean by nullification is what would be better to call single state nullification. You know, it's the issue of whether or not a single state can nullify a federal law that it believes is constitutional. Technically, the courts nullify laws all the time. We've given them, that's what we call judicial review. And so the courts nullify laws, and it's not necessarily, and that's exactly what should happen to a bad, to an unconstitutional law. It should be nullified, right? Any law contrary to the Constitution is null. It is void. That's the theory. So nullification in and of itself is not a bad word. It's not a dirty word. But when you have single states nullifying, you violate a fundamental principle of the Constitution. The basic idea is that the Constitution means the same thing in every state. It can't have the Commerce Clause has to mean the same thing in Missouri as it does in Illinois. The Second Amendment has to mean the same thing everywhere. So once you set up this single state Calhoun doctrine where, you know, Missouri decides for itself and Illinois decides for itself, then you get this absurd situation where a federal law would be unconstitutional in Missouri and perfectly constitutional in Illinois, and we got a mess on our hands. That is certainly not what the Constitution intends, and it's not where it needs to be. So you need the singularity. You need the unity of the Constitution. What you don't need is for the federal government to be that final judge, and this is the problem. I mean, if people can see that paradox, if they can see that flaw, then they will understand the need for this amendment immediately, as Madison came to realize in the 1830s.
Well, let's talk about Missouri's. Let's just break away from this for a second and talk about this law that they're going to override next week in Jefferson City. They're going to override the veto of this supposed Second Amendment preservation law. Do you see that as an attempt at single state nullification?
Oh yeah, yeah, it is. It's flawed. I mean, I, you know, it's a tough situation because, in my opinion, both the Missouri legislature and what they did is wrong. But I also read Governor Nixon's veto message. He's also wrong. He is defending the doctrine of judicial supremacy, and that the Supreme Court decides everything, and that's it. Well,
yeah.
That's flawed too. That's wrong. And
right.
Then we're sitting here, we're supposed to defend the position, well, the state of Missouri decides for itself. That's also wrong. And so we're in this bad situation. We certainly want to defend people's gun rights. That's not
yeah.
the issue. We want that defended. The question is how to defend it. And people either grasp this and realize, you know, we need an amendment to fix this. We need a way for states to push back and be the final word on this system. We don't need each state deciding for itself, and we sure as heck don't need the Supreme Court being the final word. That makes the federal government the judge of its own powers, and you can't do that. So this is where we're at. It makes an excellent example. Why do I say it's nullification? Okay, this is a very technical point, but it's because there is a provision in that bill where the state of Missouri says it can arrest a federal agent who is enforcing a federal law. Now you see where that's going to lead, right? Because I'm going to have some FBI agent or some, BATF guy, and he may arrest somebody in Missouri because they got a Tommy gun, or I don't know. I really don't know the details of what was nullified. But let's assume that that was nullified. And then the state trooper in Missouri is supposed to arrest this federal agent, and he's guilty of, I think it's a Class A misdemeanor. It comes with, a three-year prison term or something like that? So pretty
possible,
serious.
Yeah.
Well, that's not going to see the light of day, I can tell you that. That federal agent ain't going to go to prison over that, and no federal judge is going to let him do it. So we're going to be in a position in Missouri where that the federal judge will immediately nullify that provision in our law. And, you know, what are we going to do then? It's like, what's the next step? The next step is what we've been talking about for the past 2 years, which is the state repeal amendment. That's the next step, and it would have been nice if people would have seen the next step sooner. We'd be 2 years ahead of time.
So basically, we're in a world of hurt here right now because of the fact that the Constitution is being constantly amended by the Supreme Court.
Yep.
That we have, because of these Supreme Court rulings of the past century and a half, a situation where Washington feels that in all cases federal law trumps state law. Even in areas where the federal government has no constitutional authority to tread. And so what we end up with is states making single-handed efforts to try to push back.
Yeah, and they need to push coordinated efforts. I would have been fine if Missouri would have passed a nullification law that had been carefully worded. So maybe that nullification law says, we in Missouri hereby nullify these federal laws that we believe are unconstitutional, and our law will go into effect when three-fourths of the other states agree with us. I would consider that absolutely constitutionally valid, period. And I think I believe, even though we have no precedent for this, but I think most federal judges would say, yeah, that's valid, because clearly three-fourths of states, since they have the ultimate power to amend the Constitution, they certainly have the ultimate power to decide what it means as well. So I think that law written that way would stand up in court. Of course, that you then have to go down this path. It's not easy to get three-fourths of the states to agree with you. And that's why we took a shortcut, too, and we got sloppy, same as they do, and we skipped that step and said, no, we'll just do it on our own in Missouri, as if that were valid. And it's not. You cannot fix this Constitution by breaking it further. I'm just adamant on that myself. But I don't want to, you know, it's going to be, in my opinion, it's like pay me now or pay me later. Because these things are going to eventually get realized. You know, we're going to go through a painful process here where we do it the hard way, I guess. But it would be nice if people could have seen this coming sooner. We'd be ahead of the game instead of behind. I want to go back to your point of the Article 5 amendments, too, or an amendment convention out of Article 5, because I think that's one of the strongest points that you've made on this show for a long time. And it's in Levin's book very strong as well, and people need to get educated on that, too. I realize nullification is going to glaze a lot of people's eyes over, and that's not, you know, what'd he say? I don't know what he said, you know, that kind of stuff. It's just, it's a difficult topic for most people. That's been my experience. I wish it weren't, but it is. Whereas maybe the Article 5 convention, people can get more familiar with that. We can try that approach.
Well, yeah, and I think if anything great, really great, comes out of Levin's jumping on this with his book, it's going to be a re-education, especially of the right side of the spectrum, who's been running scared like ostriches with their heads in the sand, running away from this thing for years and years, with all these fears of runaway conventions and a new constitution emerging and all that. And I think you're right. I think a little education, a little reading. You know, I had a message the other day during show that basically said, you know, you've forgotten that this constitutional convention could come away with an entirely new constitution written basically by the liberals. And I just had to say, no, there is no provision in the Constitution for a constitutional convention, only for an amendment convention.
Correct. Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's probably something we should fix someday, too, because I do think there may come a time when you have to rewrite the whole thing, but I don't believe we're there right now.
Well, and if you ever did that, I mean, it would simply be a matter of, you know, when and Levin talked about this a little bit today. I don't know if you caught him today, but when the 13 colonies sent representatives to Philadelphia, 10 of them sent representatives with the state's blessing to come away with an entirely new document. Otherwise, it would never have been ratified.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I agree.
So, I mean, if that time comes, and we need to call that kind of convention, all we need to do is make sure, you know, all we need to do is know that, that three-fourths of the states are sending delegates to the convention with the blessing to completely revamp the whole of the United States of America, transform the country, as Barack would say. And if you can get three-fourths of the states to go along with that, well, then, yeah, I guess you get a new constitution. But that isn't going to happen.
No, and I don't think it's – and frankly, I mean, I can give you a really cynical answer real up front. They've already rewritten this constitution.
That's right.
I mean,
that's
I hate
right.
this. We're the ones trying to restore it. They don't understand the left very well because they're not part of the left. But the left likes what we have today. They love the living constitution. It's more power for them. They don't want to rewrite it. They've already done so. They've made a
That's
living
right.
constitution that is totally arbitrary. It's totally in the hands of the elites. It's in the hands of the judges. They like that system. We're the ones trying to get the real one back, not them.
Yep. You're actually there.
I mean, it's that's, you know, what they don't realize is that if the left were really as powerful as they claim to be, they would have been able to amend the Constitution honestly up to this point. The truth is they don't have as much power as they claim. Either that or they just love having unlimited power, perhaps. But they, you know, the New Deal was done. A lot of people didn't see the constitutional argument for the New Deal and still don't. It was just done by fiat and then having the judges back down. Why didn't they just pass an amendment? FDR had the votes, in theory, to do it.
Yeah.
That's an excellent question we need to think about. Probably because if the American people had been asked to actually vote on this and give government that power, they'd have said no. Even today, they might say, well, no, we don't want to actually give them that power explicitly. You know, we're willing to ignore it, I guess, is what it's rather sad situation we're in. But that's really, I think, closest to where we're at. The American people have been taught to ignore this. If you force them to ratify a new constitution and pass amendments and think about it, they do not want all this power in the hands of federal government. They still don't. And I think
right.
we have the winning hand if we can play it.
That's right.
Our side does seem too timid to me. I think you mentioned that, and I totally agree with that assessment. We're sometimes afraid of our own shadow. Even if the worst thing happens and you get a bad runaway convention, which is their worst nightmare, you still have to pass it through three-fourths of the states.
That's right.
I mean, and if you don't trust three-fourths of the states in this country at this point, we are lost, all right? I'll just tell you that right now.
That's
it's
right.
time to get into some bunkers. That's a, you know, and I personally, yeah.
But again, I mean, you couldn't, as to reiterate what you just said, you know, for all the cry across the land, all the loud vocals about gun control and guns gone rampant, you couldn't get the slightest gun control amendment through 38 states. You couldn't do it.
No way.
If anything, no. I mean, I think there's been a creeping erosion of gun rights. That's a fact. But nevertheless, the American people are still heavily armed, so we have to be
yeah.
honest about that. There are definitely people like, what's his name, Piers Morgan, is that his
yeah.
name?
Yeah.
The guy. I mean, he comes, well, and he has said flat out he would disarm the American people. You know, good luck, Piers. It's not
yeah.
going to, I mean, how long you've been living here, you still haven't figured out. Why don't you go to Switzerland and disarm them too while you're at it? It's not going to happen, and you know it just proves. I mean, he's an Englishman. He's an immigrant from a different. He grew up a little bit differently than those of us who grew up on John Wayne movies, and so he doesn't really understand this part of America. Obviously, it's not going to happen. They're going to keep trying the small things, but we have to remember that even after the just horrible school shooting there in Newtown, Connecticut.
Right.
It's probably one of the worst I've ever seen, for sure. I mean, I can't imagine a worse horror in my lifetime than that. It's a definite tragedy. But the bottom line is they couldn't even get a vote in the Senate for more gun control.
And while the cry and the news and the media and all the vocals and everything you hear is about stricter gun control, the actual laws that are being discussed in the states are about arming teachers.
Yeah, there you go.
So,
that's a better solution.
Okay.
No, right. I mean, why would you oppose that? Yeah, I mean, well, let's not get into the merits of that issue. I'm just saying the country's in better shape at the state level than we think. And if you can get it transferred back to states and realize that we can work from that position, I think the left will be the ones that are fearful, not us. I mean, I haven't even heard a leftist yet comment on Levin's book, for example. Now, I'm pretty sure they just soon ignore it and hope it doesn't exist. It's not like they're jumping on board saying, oh, man, here's a chance for us to rewrite the Constitution. No, they've already done it, people. They like what they've got now.
The several who've actually written about it have as you noted, of the leftists have been very critical of it. No, we can't do this. This is not something we want to do. There's nothing wrong with the Constitution the way it is. We love America, and so we love the Supreme Court telling us that it's perfectly legal for cops to stop people randomly at the side of the road and check and see if they're drunk. Okay, well, there's a short history, brothers and sisters, of how we got to where we are. And when we come back from this break, we're going to dive right into the back parts of Lloyd's brain, and we're going to get the details of the state repeal amendment and how it's going to work, and how we on this show are going to propose we approach the Article 5 Amendment Convention with a solid amendment that would bring the majority of all the power originally granted by the Constitution right back home where it belongs. 347-677-1835. That's 347-677-1835. Join us.
The emergency destruct system is now activated.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
Brain.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
Ain't that just the truth? Okay. Some people without a brains do an awful lot of talking, don't they, Lloyd? We're back, folks. In the last segment, we reviewed the history of Madison and his ideas that the states needed to be able to countermand in mass bad federal policy. And Lloyd has done some writing on this. Lloyd has done a lot of speaking on this. We talked to Lloyd about a year and a half ago, and we're not going to wait another year and a half to have him back. We're going to revisit this topic as often as it takes. This segment, Lloyd is going to tell us the specifics about his proposal for a state repeal amendment. And then in the next segment, we're going to go, Lloyd and I are going to go into what you need to do to make this kind of thing happen. So, okay, Lloyd, tell us how this is going to work. How do the states get together and say no to the federal government?
Of course, one, we're talking about a constitutional amendment, so, you know, we'll, under Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution, it gives you the ways to propose an amendment to the Constitution. One way is for Congress itself to make the proposal, and that takes two-thirds of Congress to do it. The other way is for two-thirds of the states to propose a convention for proposing amendments, okay? So they call for this. They petition Congress, and then Congress calls for a convention to propose amendment. The second method, where the states call for it, has never happened in American history. All of our amendments to this point have been proposed by Congress, and it takes two-thirds to do it. So we don't believe it's very likely that Congress is going to propose this amendment. If they do, it's great. I'm very happy to see them do it, but I wouldn't spend a whole lot of our energy and effort lobbying John Boehner and Harry Reid, here, pass this amendment that severely limits your power. It's not likely to happen. They can't even agree to cut the federal budget, you know, by a dollar. I don't think they're going to pass this one. In fact, this is sad, but as a historical observation, we have had 27 amendments to the Constitution of the United States. The first 10 are called the Bill of Rights, and people learn that in high school. Those first 10 limited the power of the federal government very specifically because it says
right.
Congress shall make no law. So we all remember the Bill of Rights. Those were the first 10 that got passed. Since those 10 amendments, the other 17 all increased the power of the federal government.
That's right. That's exactly right.
So think about that for a second, people, and understand that the logic has been going the other way now for close to 200 years. And I'm not saying Congress would never do it, but I think we're going to have to make them do it. One approach, which the balanced budget amendment people tried, and also I think the term limits amendment tried, is to go ahead and risk this amendment convention and have the states call for it directly and say, you know, Congress, we want these following amendments, or we want this specific amendment, and we want you to call a convention for proposing amendments. And if you can get two-thirds of the states together and do that, then Congress has to call the convention, and then we can get it done that way. I have an intermediate proposal, too, which I think might work. Incidentally, I do believe, I'll say this much, if you got to two-thirds of states, I think two-thirds of states is 34 states, I believe. Yeah, 34 states would do it. When you get to the 33rd state, Congress is going to do something. I can just tell you that right now. Once you get to the 33rd and the 34th state, the Speaker of the House in that state, let's say it's Missouri, calls up, you know, John Boehner and Harry Reid and says, guess what? I am 2 inches from passing this. Would you guys like to give me this amendment and just, you know, we can call this off? Or do you really want me to just bury it? All right, because it's going to be one of the two. And my guess is Congress would back down and send out the amendments that we want once we get that close to the process. I have an even more moderate suggestion that might also work, and that is suppose every state, you know, rather than just – suppose we just do something very modest and every state petitions Congress and says, Congress, would you pretty please pass the state repeal amendment? Because we all really like this idea, and here's the wording, and two-thirds of us all agree that you should propose this. Now, Congress now faces the same choice. Do you want to ignore those two-thirds of states, or do you want to just go ahead and propose it and save us all a lot of trouble? That is another approach we could take. It's fairly timid. At the same time, let us say that two-thirds of the states ask for this specific amendment. And Congress ignores that, just says, forget you guys, we don't care. I would think those two-thirds of states are now sufficiently upset that it's not going to take any time at all, and they're just going to say, fine, here comes an amendment convention. You chose to ignore us. You know, we're not going to be ignored. We're going to do it without you. That is also an approach that I think might work, and it certainly would help those who are timid amongst our own, you know, constituency, or, you know, the small government people who are timid. They might finally see that, yeah, we really do have to call an amendment convention. We have no choice. They have given us no choice whatsoever.
Okay, and so we get this amendment convention, or we get this proposition together. What specifically does the state repeal amendment call for?
I have the language, which we could read it, I suppose. I mean, that's it give you a little history of it. The language originally came from a Randy Barnett, who's a Georgetown law professor. And he had published his language of it in 2010 in the Wall Street Journal. When he did, Virginia, Florida, and South Carolina actually passed versions of that through their legislature, and Gene Cunningham even introduced a bill for it in Missouri. That was a two-thirds repeal amendment. So I took Barnett's language, which is quite good in my opinion, and changed it to a representative majority instead of a two-thirds majority. And that's the one I would try and put through. I'll read it right here if you want me to read it. It's not too long. The state repeal amendment says, any provision of law or regulation of the United States may be repealed by the several states, and such repeal shall be effective when the legislatures of a representative majority of the several states approve resolutions for this purpose that particularly describe the same provision or provisions of law or regulation to be repealed. And then it defines a representative majority of the several states is a majority of the states also having together a majority of the representatives in the Congress. So that's the full language and the full text. What does it mean? It means the states do what judges do. I mean, if I were to talk very loosely, I would say this gives in the hands of the states the same power that the judges have. And if the states get together and they describe these things in the law that they want repealed and they agree with each other, it's gone. That's the idea.
Okay, so if this thing were in place, how would we go about doing that? I mean, what would we do here in Missouri if we think something is some federal law is that tells us we can't buy incandescent light bulbs over 50 watts, 60 watts, and we want to repeal that? What would we start doing?
I mean, I think you just described it. I mean, to me, I mean, I'm not an attorney, but I think the legislature in Missouri simply has to pass a resolution out of both houses that says we found this provision in the Department of Commerce that outlaws these light bulbs, you know, that are incandescent under 100 watts or whatever, and it is hereby repealed. And that's it.
Okay.
And then you get 26 other states that represent a majority of the American people to agree with you, and they vote the same thing, it's gone. That's what you do.
It's that simple.
Well, it is that simple. I mean, it is that simple, really. At that point, you know, I mean, you don't really avoid the courts in this, because what's going to happen, I mean, I think Congress will eventually then just say, okay, we recognize that law's gone. They can decide if they want to pass another one. We can have the little dance that people always have. But you've always given these states a trump. That's the key. The states have a trump card that they can play. And frankly, we could have just, I mean, when Obamacare first came out, I could see where you already had states in such an outrage that they would have simply said, we hereby repeal the Affordable Care Act in entirety. And it would be that simple. And you get 26 states representing a majority of the people, and it's gone. It's gone that fast.
Oh, no, I agree with you. I've said from the beginning that if we didn't have a 17th Amendment, we wouldn't have had Obamacare to start with, because if the Senate were still representing the the will of the states rather than a direct election of the people and the lobbyists, it would have never made it through the smaller body.
Yeah, I think there's an argument for that. I do. You know, it's certainly, particularly with all the regulations and burdens that, you know, Obamacare does put on the states, because it expects the states to start these health care exchanges, and, you know, they got to do the Medicaid expansions, and all this stuff gets pushed on the states. And right now, Missouri's saying no. I mean, we're digging in our heels here and saying no, but a lot of other states have caved because the pressure really builds on them to
do this.
And they would love, I don't know if you were watching Greta Van Susteren, I think it was last week, she had Governor Walker on from Wisconsin. And at one point, he just got so frustrated because he said, you know, they're making me do this. You know, they're sending me all this Medicaid stuff. They're sending me all these healthcare exchange things that I'm supposed to set up. And he, in an exasperation, frustration, he says, I wish I could push back against this. And I wish I'd been a guest on that show because I said, have I got the solution for you, Governor? I got a state repeal amendment you are going to love, you know, because you're going to be able to push back for a change. I think that's very much the frustration out in the great grassroots land here, out here in flyover country for sure. The states would like to be able to push back.
So as you go around carrying this state repeal amendment from station to station, how do you have any support in the state legislature at all on this?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Oh yeah, no, I've talked to several state legislators on this, and unfortunately, one of the best ones that we had on it, Jim Lemke, who I'm going to give him a plug right now, and clearly understood the idea, but he. He lost his reelection. He was kind of redistricted out. I won't get into the politics of it.
Right.
But he was a definite loss for us. Now, there's a few others. I think Ed Emery, who was a guest on your show even, the senator,
right.
State senator, has definitely expressed an interest in this idea. Not necessarily their top priority. I know that the Speaker of the House has seen the idea and is very sympathetic. But again, is this the top priority right now? No. No, I mean, to be fair, they have many priorities, and, you know, we need to educate people in the grassroots, frankly, to understand this and why it's important, and that will help our legislators. You know, I think they will lead once they realize that people are interested in it. People are definitely interested in what can be done about Obamacare. They're still mad about that Supreme Court ruling. They're frustrated, and they do see the Constitution slipping away, and they're not sure what they can do about it. Right now, you know, that's partly why people pursue nullification as a possible solution. They haven't yet seen that that doesn't work and that it's not going to give them what they think they're going to get. And so as these frustrations build, I think, you know, having what I believe is a real solution to it is going to sell more and more and more. That's the hope.
Okay.
I was just down in Fayetteville, Arkansas last week and gave this idea to a small group down there. There were a few attorneys there that just loved this. They can't wait to push it through the Arkansas legislature. I feel a little home state pride. I'd rather Missouri be first, okay? But,
oh, absolutely.
You know, if the Razorbacks beat us, they beat us. You know, what can I say? Yeah, it'd be nice to be first in Missouri. That's my preference. But, yeah, there are some other states that I have pursued this with now. But, obviously, I focus most on Missouri.
So are you of the opinion that if one state actually gets a resolution passed, that that other states will follow?
I think that's the way it works in life, is it not? Nobody, you know, the hardest one's the first one sometimes. And then after that, other people say, now, what did you just do? Oh, wow, that's interesting. And I think Missouri can make a name for itself if we're first out of the box on this one. Like I said, we're not entirely first out of the box because – in some ways, Virginia and Florida and South Carolina passed something similar back in 2010. I just think this is a better version than the two-thirds. Levin is also proposing something similar. Okay, it's not exactly the same, but it's similar.
Right.
So, you know, we're all thinking along the same lines. You know, some people are going to have to give this a little bit more thought so they can decide, all right, do we like this language or do we like this language? Which approach do we think is best? That's healthy. We need that more and more. That is also, incidentally, an argument for why you might want an amendment convention. Because, you know, I've been thinking about this for a long time, and I love this idea, but I'm not going to sit here and tell people any more than Mark Levin would tell people, I got all the answers here, get them from me. You can gain by having a convention of some of the best and brightest thinkers in this country coming together. And I don't. And if they would slog it out and really get the best language, you might find that that convention is a gain for you rather than a loss.
Oh, absolutely.
No one got everything they wanted out of the 1787 Constitutional Convention, right? And Madison came out of there rather upset because some ideas that he thought were critical did not make it into the document. And I imagine others shared that same frustration. But the truth is that convention is an act of collective genius. When you read the notes from the convention, it's pretty impressive. I do respect that, and I am not naive thinking that we can necessarily duplicate that incredible achievement. I seriously doubt we could. The circumstances of the time that they're in, having come out of that revolution, just having George Washington present and what he represented to the nation at that time. Frankly, we couldn't possibly rewrite this Constitution because we don't have a George Washington today. And the only thing that made that possible was that he was there, and no one was going to question George Washington and his integrity and his honesty. And when he stood by the Constitution, even though it is a fairly radical change from the Articles, nevertheless, people trusted him. And if he hadn't been on board, I don't think it would have happened. We just don't have a George Washington. And for people to think that we can go into a convention in secret and come out with a whole new Constitution – no way. That's just, it shows you how fearful and paranoid some of our own people are, that they, and how much, you know, they, without saying it out loud, they clearly believe that the country is way off track. And I think they're right. It is off track, but it's not that. It's not so far off track that they can do a slam dunk like that. I mean, although, if you give them a few more years to have the NSA spy on all of us, then we'll see where they can get to. That concerns me considerably. This is a side issue.
I'm. We and you and I may get together for another 2-hour talk on that some night, and
yeah.
all the innuendos and offshoots of that. But tonight, I've agreed with you, and I've said on this very show. Not this show tonight, but on my Monday night shows where we're concentrating on Article 5, that I would hate to see. I've agreed with you that once this thing gets near the 2/3 tipping point, Congress will start making some moves. I've suggested that we need to push anyway. We need to push all the way to the 2/3. We need to push to the convention because I don't believe that you will get the quality of open debate about what these amendments exactly need to be. I don't believe you'll get the quality of legitimate compromise out of the House and Senate that you would get out of this convention.
And I think that is a fair point. And I think our people need to, you know, have a little bit more vision, show a little bit more understanding that the amendment could actually, the convention could be a good thing.
Yeah.
It's not just a bad thing. You can, when you get the best and brightest minds there, you can actually get something very good come out of that. That'd be very helpful to us. But I also believe we need to have this kind of public dialogue going already, so that to me is the building blocks for a successful convention. Having a lot of people discussing, you know, we got a problem here. What are different solutions? This is where I say Levin has really pushed the ball forward.
Right.
I don't want to focus as much, and I'm not disagreeing with your point, so don't get me wrong, and I am not fearful of an amendment convention at all. I do think there's some good in it, but I'm willing to go slower perhaps than some of the other advocates. I think I don't want to put the cart before the horse. to me, the convention is the means to the end. And if I didn't have some amendments that I was already thinking of that I feel could justify that convention, then I wouldn't push for the convention just in the hopes that something good comes out of it. I really want us to focus on the amendments first and say to ourselves, are these amendments worth a convention? And if they are, then do it. And if they aren't, then don't. You know, but let's focus, let's make sure that the horse is in front of the cart, that the amendments drive the process, and that the convention is ultimately a means to perfecting that. But we have to face also the reality that our Constitution is in very bad shape right now. So if you're saying don't do anything, that's unacceptable to me. I mean, I realize people are fearful of a convention. Sometimes they're even fearful of amendments. When do you start getting afraid of having a busted Constitution like this? When does that scare you? Because it scares me big time.
I challenge the motive of anyone who claims to be a conservative or from the right who says they're afraid to do something when they look at the condition of the Constitution and the amount of power usurped by the federal government. And I will contend that over 75% of those who say that are just sitting back saying, well, we want this liquid Constitution when we're the ones in power.
Yep, I think so. I think you have a fair point. You know, that could certainly be a sinister motive for it. We already see that the parties, you know, that neither one of them is what they claim to be.
Oh no.
And so, you know, there's progressives, and there have been progressives for the past 100 years in both parties. Republicans actually invented the progressive movement. Democrats came in behind. Teddy Roosevelt's very definitely a progressive. So was Taft. They both described themselves that way. You know, Wilson comes after those two, not before. And so Republicans are, you know, they have a tendency to be elitist at times, particularly on the money side and the wealth side. And I think that's, you know, part of it. And Democrats tend to be elitist on the intellectual side, in my opinion, which is why they do well in a lot of the universities and the schools. And Democrats all, you know, at the top, especially, they all think they're smarter than everybody else. And so, you know, that describes the elites in both of our parties, kind of a ruling class mentality. Then they like that living Constitution doctrine. I believe that is true. They're certainly comfortable with it.
Yeah.
We have a lot of work ahead, but I do think the average American is starting to pick up on this. I titled the book Constitutional Awakening because I do believe that's what we're headed into. And more and more people waking up to the state of the Constitution that something needs to be done. I don't go to any Republican gathering anymore that every single speaker talks about the Constitution. I don't know if you have noticed this yourself, but it is rampant in all the events that I go to. And they never have a solution. They never really get specific as to how we're going to fix this or what's really specifically busted and, you know, where we're not following it. But I believe that you keep talking like this, it's resonating with people. They know there's a problem. And I think that's where we're headed. I think that dialogue is going to be good. And I think an amendment convention, at least not being afraid of it, is part of that process. The other good thing that can come from an amendment convention that we don't think about enough is it is actually a good thing for the states to take charge again. And that is exactly what would happen if the states call this convention and Congress, you know, did it against the will of Congress. That is a clear message to everybody that the states are in charge of this system still and not Congress, not Washington, D.C. That's powerful. That's an extremely strong political message that we really do want to send. We are one nation, under God, indivisible, whatever, liberty,
right,
justice for all. But if push comes to shove, we are the United States of America. It is the states that are this country, and together united, not that government in Washington, D.C. They are definitely the central government of the people of the United States, but It is the states that are the supreme authority when acting together, period.
Absolutely. Okay, and that's a perfect time for a break. We're going to come back in the next segment, and we're going to start talking to you folks out there about what you need to do to get this ball rolling.
If you, who make less than $250,000 a year, which includes 98% of small business owners, you will not see your taxes increase one single dime.
Hello, it's Dave, and I'm here to tell you that on Saturday nights at 7 o'clock, we talk about the fair tax on the Fair Tax Show. That Saturday night at 7 o'clock on Missouri Grassroots Radio, we explode the myths, we tell the truth, we get to the bottom of this tax code that ought to be the one to replace the IRS. Get involved in the discussion. Learn everything there is to learn. 347-677-1835, Saturday, 7 o'clock p.m., Missouri Grassroots Radio.
We have never invested as much in public education as we should have because we've always had kind of a private notion of children. Your kid is yours and totally your responsibility. We haven't had a very collective notion of these are our children. So part of it is we have to break through our kind of private idea that kids belong to their parents or kids belong to their families and recognize that kids belong to whole communities. Once it's everybody's responsibility and not just the households, then we start making better investment.
If you who make less than $250,000 a year, which includes 98% of small business owners, you will not see your taxes increase one single dime.
Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death.
All right, we're back. Lloyd Sloan's joined us tonight, and I promised Lloyd that I wouldn't ask him to come along on Saturday nights and try to sell you all on the fair tax. But here he is tonight to try to sell us all on the state repeal amendment, which I know and love myself. And so we come down to this point where you know, we've got this whole audience out here, Lloyd, who's been sitting around for years and years saying, I feel so helpless. What can I do? So it seems to me like the beginning for anyone here is to contact their state legislator.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, if you, that's just a very simple thing everybody can do, and that'll raise awareness of the idea. And I think, yeah, just call your state legislator and say, have you ever heard of this state repeal amendment idea? What do you think of it? And, you know, I heard it on, the Missouri Grassroots Radio and said, wow, that's a pretty cool idea. Why don't you look into that? And that gets the ball rolling, absolutely. You know, this is why I love state legislators, incidentally. You know, just another plug for the state approach, but you can actually do that. You can actually call up your state legislator. You can go visit their home. You can see them in Jefferson City.
Yeah.
Good luck calling up Roy Blunt and getting through.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
or dropping into his office unannounced and getting even a hello from him.
Can you imagine if we advocated that approach and said, here's what we need to do. We need to call up our Congress in Washington, D.C. and mention this idea to them. And, you know, that's how to get interest in it. Good luck with that. It's not
going
to happen that way. We all know it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, all I do if I've got some specific thing I want to talk about is I pick up the phone, I call my my local state representative, and I say, hey, how about giving me 45 minutes tonight? And he says, yeah, you know, or I drive up to Washington D.C. Most usually in a group of people, and you just walk the halls there, and you know, you talk to these guys, you shake their hand, you go in their office, you say hello to the aide, and you'd like to see Jim Lemke, and Jim comes out of the office and shakes your hand, and he's glad to see you.
Yeah, this is a strong selling point. We have to realize, you know, the Constitution of the United States is not a Republican Constitution. It's not a Democrat Constitution. And it's not even a capitalist or socialist Constitution. It's a federal constitution.
That's
it's
right.
Designed to put – that's the key insight that we have lost in America because we've centralized. If you look at the last 100 years, we have just centralized so much in D.C., and that's an inherently elitist approach, frankly, and it's less democratic. We're actually advocating democratic solutions. I'm not arguing that state legislators are necessarily smarter than Congress. You know, I don't know that that's true. I don't think Nancy Pelosi's all that brilliant, frankly. But I'm not, you know, I think there's some smart people in D.C. for sure, and you would expect that. What I would insist is that these state legislators that we have around this country are far more representative of the American people than Congress will ever be.
Right.
They are just like us, people. They have real jobs. They have real concerns. And, you know, they're doing – and you know, there's generally one for every 40,000 people at the at the state rep level rather than one for every million people at the – that's just the U.S. rep level. That's the you know, the House of Representatives. And there's just – they are – you know, it's true of the left and it's true of the right, whatever those terms mean. You know, these people are farmers, they're nurses, they're college professors, they're small businessmen. I mean, when do you ever have a small businessman in Congress anymore? You don't. They're millionaires is what they are, and they're lawyers and intellectual elites and et cetera. We all know this drill. And so I really strongly believe that we can – I think a lot of Democrats will resonate with this idea that, yeah, let's get at least that part back to the states. They can form – they can be a huge democratic check on some of these laws that pass that are just not very popular. I, you know, I'll give you another example, and this is more from the left than from the right, but I'm not so sure that the federal marijuana laws would stand for too long anymore, given the changes that are going on in the country in California, some of the western states legalizing. I even think Alabama might say, look, as long as we can keep our state laws, get rid of the federal ones. We're happy with that. And so I think you could actually repeal federal marijuana laws with the state repeal amendment. That's not my goal. I'm not thinking, but I would be curious to see what would happen if this went to the states and they said, let's make this a state matter instead of a federal matter.
Oh, absolutely.
Save some money.
You know, there's a huge cry, especially from the left, but from some on the right, you know. You know, we can't make the federal government as small as it was in 1776, as small as it was envisioned by the founders, because, you know, you've got to have somebody regulating who's throwing pollutants into the streams. You've got to have someone regulating, you know, safe medicines. You've got to have someone regulating safe foods. Well, okay, what has that got to do, or what has it ever had to do with the federal government? Is anyone out there imagining for 1 minute that if the federal government ceased to function on that level today, that every state wouldn't have something to guarantee safe food? Wouldn't have something to guarantee safe medicine? Wouldn't have some way to keep someone from throwing a pollutant? And if someone upstream in the Mississippi is throwing pollutants in, then it's a federal matter under the federal law.
No, point well made. Yeah, we are not trying to get rid of all federal laws. That is not our objective. Our objective is to give a check on the part of states. I mean, one of the things that I notice is, say, you can't drink raw milk or something like that. I'm not an expert on raw milk. But, I mean, the federal government's being very heavy-handed when they come in to some of these rural communities. People have been drinking raw milk for ages without dying, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, and I think in Washington, D.C., they have such an elitist, just urban mentality that they don't understand these rural states. I mean, in Missouri, you know, I think we could easily get rid of a raw milk restriction in the federal government just because we do have a strong rural population that would be well represented in the state legislatures. I'm sure Montana could do it. If Missouri can't, Montana would. And then let these states do this stuff. Let them use their local expertise and their local culture, quite frankly, instead of having one size fits all out of D.C. This argument, incidentally, is very popular with the American people. They still like this, both left and right. I mean, you find Democrats like this, same as Republicans, independents like it. You know, you get into some of the problems with it. I think the black community is fearful because they'll hear this and they'll say, "Well, you guys are just trying to bring back segregation. Are you trying to, you know, trying to very bad past?" that was associated with states' rights and things like that. I emphasize again and again, this isn't the same as states' rights. It's really not. Because typically when you say states' rights, you're talking about one state alone. So you do have this kind of nullification, you know, single state mentality. This is a state repeal amendment, but it does take a majority of states to do it. It's not like Alabama on its own can nullify something and go ahead and have segregation. You would have to have a majority of states doing it. And that's not going to happen, okay? That is not going to happen again. This is a very different idea. This is to protect federalism is what this is to protect.
That's right.
This is to protect a decentralized system, which frankly, back in the 60s, that's what the left wanted. I don't know if you remember. They'd always say, do your own thing, and
yep,
small
that's right.
is beautiful, and you know, think globally, act locally, all this kind of stuff. I mean, these were decentralized. These people wanted it decentralized. And I'm just trying to say, do you still believe in that or not? I know that we on the right do. I mean, when I say right, I mean the small government types. We believe in decentralized systems. We don't want it all centralized in D.C. I just think that's very, very common in the American people. Once they see this idea is designed to do that, and it really that's the purest way to understand it, then I think it's going to be very popular. I think Madison, good old Madison, man, he didn't lead us astray. He gave us a good idea. There's no doubt about it. I mean, that's how I think of this as a connection all the way back to the beginning, an original founder, the father of the Constitution. Here is an idea that can be traced all the way back to that man who a year from death was still thinking about his Constitution and how to make it better. The idea excites me every time, you know, I think about it, right? I love the idea.
Where can people go on the web to get more information, Lloyd?
They will find only minimal right now because I don't have a lot of web presence on this. I am working on a website, but I hate to even give it out. The best way would be to go to my website, LloydSloan.com, and they'll find stuff on mine. But I don't necessarily want them to associate the idea just with me, but that is one place you can go. Email me at any time as well. But it is a minimal web presence until I can get the book finished. I am working on a book that introduces this, and so that's probably where it's going to sit until I can get the book out.
How long you figure that'll be?
Oh, this year.
Okay.
You know. I thought it would be last year, too, so let me... But no, it's going to happen this year. It's going to happen this year, period.
You mean before the end of 2013?
Yeah, and there's actually... I mean, you raise a good point, because I'm getting enough people now asking me about this, because I have kind of, you know, gone and talked about it even as
right.
I was working on the book. I do think that I need to beef up those websites. So I will tell you that I have two domains out there, constitutionalawakening.com and also madisonslostamendment.com and also staterepealamendment.com. And all three of those are out there. I'm going to point them all to the same place.
Sure.
But basically, eventually, once I get that web presence established, and that should happen this year too, people would be able to find all this stuff. We have I have a booklet out there that has model legislation in it. They could get the text of it. You know, contact me, contact your show, then get in touch with me and get more information that way. And I'd love to come to speak to groups, because I've been speaking to groups now, just Tea Party groups, Heritage Foundation groups. They've been interested in it. Some of the Campaign for Liberty groups, Republican groups, just general pachyderm groups. I would like to get more Democrat groups. Actually, I want to, you know, see if they just how they react to the idea, just in an abstract way. Because if this is just a Republican idea, it will fail.
Right.
It will. And even with Levin's amendments, the one thing I was going to say is if you read David Stockman's book, and we have to make a sincere effort to fix the Constitution, get it back to the American people. That may require what David Stockman called an omnibus amendment. Okay, now, omnibus meaning it comes from all different places, so it has different sources. And we may have to combine the state repeal amendment with an amendment that say we don't like as much, because the left is going to say, well, that's fine. We'll give you your state repeal amendment, but you have to give us a whole new commerce clause that gives tons of powers to the federal government. So suppose they offer that deal. I would take it. I'm just speaking for me, but I would take the deal because, one, they already have those powers now anyway. Okay, so
right.
I'm not really losing that much. I'm just making it official, and I'm gaining a huge check on them. So to me, that's a good deal, and I jump at it. But I'm using it just as an example of an omnibus amendment that might have to – and this is another plus for a convention approach as well, because these kind of deals do have to get cut sometimes. And I'm well aware that we're not going to maybe get our way entirely on this stuff. I think that we're the ones who really are driving the effort, and that's a fact. But we'll see how it ends up in the end. I think the state repeal amendment, of all the amendment ideas that I've seen, and there's dozens of them, this is the best. This is the one that I would go to war on.
All right, people, get out your pencils and paper. How does a group get in touch with you, Lloyd, if they'd like you to come and make a presentation?
Yeah, you can go to LloydSloan.com, and you'll find my email there. So that's 2 L's, O-I-D, Sloan, S-L-O-A-N.com. And
all right.
My email is Lloyd_Sloan@yahoo.com. And I'm also on Facebook, so you can find me on Facebook, and you know, that would also work. And I will be at a debate, incidentally, since I think you mentioned the fair tax. There'll be a, you know, I hope a very informative debate November 1st between the fair tax and other groups, you know, and we'll have a good discussion on that, and people can learn about that, too. And that's in St. Louis, November 1st.
All right. And Lloyd will be there at that debate, pushing the fair tax. And
well, I don't want to misrepresent it, but I if you actually put a gun to my head and you said, Lloyd, would you take that deal? If you can truly abolish the IRS and replace it with a sales tax, would you do it? I don't like it, but the IRS is a hated and despised thing, so you can argue that's definitely a step forward, okay? Because you're getting rid of a really – now, I would need a constitutional amendment to assure that's going to stick. But, you know, if it's a real deal, it's not a bad one, right? At least not for me, because I hate IRS like everybody else. I do think there's better approaches to getting rid of IRS, and that's what I'm going to argue. So it's not like
all
I'm a – it's not like I hate the fair tax, but I think I got a better solution.
And maybe my good buddy Lloyd and I will spend 2 hours on that some night, but not tonight.
Yeah.
Lloyd has been with us before. He's talked about this state repeal amendment at times in the past, and he's talked he actually joined us one night when we talked about the Federal Reserve and what we need to do about that. Lloyd's knowledgeable. Lloyd, you went to Harvard. I'm impressed.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah, I did go to Harvard. I will tell you a story that, I went to Harvard quite a few years ago, and so I was actually in the graduating class that Bill Gates would have graduated had he stayed. Okay, so that's my class. And I actually transferred in. So there is a good chance that I took Bill Gates' spot at Harvard. And I think it's pretty obvious who made the right decision.
Well, that depends. That depends on what
well,
you're.
Well, I think he did a little bit better leaving than I did coming in. That's all I'm saying. In fact, I think he probably did better than every single one of the members of the graduating class who stayed. That's perhaps too extreme. I'm not sure about that.
You're more enlightened.
Oh, I hope so. Yeah. You know, it was an experience. I talk about it a few times, but I generally tell people, you know, it doesn't bother me if they hate Harvard because, frankly, I know better why you hate Harvard than you know why you hate Harvard. It's an exciting place. I'm not really down on it. The best and the brightest do go there. They're very intellectual. They love to argue. It's very hard to describe Harvard because it is an extremely diverse place, much more so than people might think. But it also oozes intellectualism, and it is an upper class institution. You know, it is where the wealthy and powerful play. There's no doubt about that too. So, you know, it has all those aspects to it. But it's one of the finest educations of learning in the history of this country and the world, something we can all be proud of, at least to that degree. And when I was at Harvard, there were people there who were definitely some of the strongest small government advocates you could want. Robert Nozick was there at the time. That's a name you don't hear very often anymore. But he was a major philosopher, wrote a book called Anarchy, State, and Utopia. He did a pretty good job debating leftists, I'll tell you that. He was quite good at it. So there's some proud moments.
Okay, so back a long, long time ago, before any of us were born, in Philadelphia, a bunch of guys got together and came up with this Constitution. And it was a convention. That convention, most people don't realize that convention went a little bit more than 3 months.
Oh, yeah.
Those guys worked every day. They did take a long holiday for the 4th of July, and they did not work on Sundays. Other than that, they worked 6 days a week, and they debated, and they talked, and they took things back to their states, and they came back, and they talked some more. And on the next to the last day of that long, long convention, they were going over the specific wording that the Style Committee had come back with that was proposed to be the final Constitution. And when they got to Article 5, which specifically said that the Constitution could be amended by two-thirds of both houses, and that that two-thirds of both houses had to do so if they were petitioned by the states, the state legislatures, to do so. A guy named George Mason stood up and said, "That's not good enough." He said, "I'm damn sure that this government is going to start centralizing power unto itself in a very short term. And when that happens, the way this Article 5 is set up, the people aren't going to have any way to get this thing passed, because every aspect of Article 5, the way it's written, leaves that power in the hands of the legislature, which we'll assume at that point in time has become corrupt and omnipotent. And he debated and he proposed Article 5 as it stands today, giving states the right to go around their own legislature, to go around the Senate and the House of Representatives, to go above the head of the president, and to do what states are supposed to do, and that is run their country. And that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about that when we talk about Article 5. We're talking about that weekly here on Monday nights. And Lloyd has come along with this state repeal amendment that should be a centerpiece of the proposals that go to this convention that we're trying to get moving. An amendment that says the states can now understand what Lloyd's talking about here. Correct me if I'm wrong, Lloyd, but what Lloyd's talking about is an amendment itself that says states have the right to repeal any federal law that they can get a majority of the states that equal a majority of the population to want repealed. Am I right?
That's correct. Yep.
Okay.
I was going to correct you when you're wrong, but you hadn't been wrong yet. So, you know. But I was going to compliment you on your history of the origin of that provision in the Constitution. It was we can credit George Mason. He saw it was a flaw. He argued to have two methods to do it, that the states needed an out, and he pretty much got no dissent that I'm aware of. I'd have to go back and look at it, but I don't recall anybody saying that's a bad idea. They all said it's fine. Yeah, that we need that. That's a good idea.
It was proposed. It was moved. It was seconded, and it was passed. It was passed unanimously, right?
Yeah, I can't imagine anybody opposing that because that would be. I mean, you put, that is exactly why the founders put it in too. People need to understand that this is not a self-destruct button that these guys were stupid enough to put in the Constitution. That's not what's going on here. If anything, the Constitution would have been fatally flawed if only Congress could propose amendments. That would have been heavily criticized out in the states because they'd have realized, now, once we get this thing in, how can we ever fix it? Suppose Congress blocks it. You've shut us off. And so they needed that provision. That was a very welcome provision. It's just we've never used it. The reason we didn't use it is because James Madison proposed that Bill of Rights. If he had not done that and he pushed it through Congress, then I guarantee the states would have forced the issue right off the bat and they would have put the Bill of Rights in themselves. It's kind of interesting how our history works. I almost wish that would have happened now. I wish that Congress would have been slow and not gotten around to it, and so the states would have said, fine, we're going to do it. And they would have immediately done it.
In fact, without the Bill of Rights and what was at that point in time just the promise of a Bill of Rights from a bunch of men whose word meant something, there would have been no ratification of the Constitution to start with. The states would have said no.
That's correct. That was a deciding point at many of the ratifying conventions. Some of the bigger states, Massachusetts, Virginia, you know, they were promised a Bill of Rights, which was very common at the time. And so, deliver on that promise would have been very.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. And it's important to remember as we talk about an Article 5 convention, as we talk about the slaughter that the Constitution has seen in the last century and a half, the complete emaciation of the Constitution of the United States, it's important to remember that these wise people who met in Philadelphia established this article, for that matter, and the Constitution with its limited powers for the federal government for one specific reason, that is for as statesmanly as they were, for as brave as they were, for as much as they knew that there were some things the states couldn't do, they jealously feared a central government, and they jealously wanted to protect the rights of their states.
Yep. I love that point. I think you're underscoring what I'm hearing in that message, at least when you started out, was has always been a puzzle to me. Why do the same people who praise the Constitution, think it's a great document, why then won't they give those founders credit for putting this other provision in there? Why are they so fearful of something that the founders thought was important enough to put in the original document?
Oh, yeah.
I realize part of it is that we've never used it. But honestly, we didn't use it because the federal government never got this big until really post-World War II, since the New Deal. And this is exactly what the founders were concerned about, that you would have a runaway federal government and the states would need to then be the ultimate protection in the system. That's why that is exactly why this provision is in there, frankly. And we can make it work as they intended. Their foresight and their vision is incredible, frankly. I think this is going to happen. I'm actually optimistic, Dave. I'm not pessimistic. I think the country's been through worse. We should not forget that 150 years ago, this country was engaged in a great civil war, right? That's Lincoln's words. And we have been through worse, and we will come through this, too. I'm convinced of it. We cannot find a better model than James Madison for this, and this is a lost amendment idea of his. That I go back to that again and again whenever I doubt, what am I thinking, how could this work? Well, it can work because one of the greatest founders of this country thought it would work, too. So put your faith in that.
Okay, we're not going to wait a year and a half to have you back, Lloyd. We're going to come back in a while, and we're going to talk about this again, and we're going to talk about it again and again and again until people catch on. You folks, pick up the phone, get on the email, get a hold of your state legislator, and tell them tell them that you heard about the state repeal amendment from Lloyd Sloan himself on Missouri Grassroots Radio, and you want to know where your state representative stands on that, and maybe you have to educate them on what it's all about. And maybe you have to write them a little email and tell them how it works, because probably they don't even know a thing about it. So do that. Do that, and do it promptly. Now, that's aside from the email that every one of you needs to be sending to every state legislator. Whether the state legislator is yours or not, you need to spend a Saturday afternoon sending an email to every state legislator. Saying we want Missouri to pass a resolution for an Article 5 Amendment Convention. We want that done. We want to take our country back. We're tired of all the power in Washington, D.C. We know that you down there in Jefferson City are tired of all the power in Washington, D.C. So what are you waiting on? Give this to us. Get that done and get it done here in the next week or so. We're going to be here every Monday night harping about this, preaching about this, talking about this, educating you about this, reminding you about this, discussing with you this Article 5 convention, as Lloyd said, the amendments that we need to be proposing, debating those issues. We're going to get some legislators on here in the next couple of weeks, and we're going to actually talk about with them about how they think you need to approach their colleagues in Jefferson City to get this thing done. Lloyd, thanks for coming along. It's always a pleasure. I want you to shoot me an email or a message as soon as your book hits so that we can get you on here and get a plug out for that. And as soon as you get those websites up and running, again, come back and spend a little time with us so we can direct people to the words of the expert on state repeal amendment. And we want to thank you ever so much for coming along and sharing with us tonight. I enjoyed it and learned a lot.
I enjoyed it as well. Thanks for having me, Dave. I will give you a plug. I've given this discussion and presented this idea to a lot of people now, and there's always about maybe 10% where the light bulb just goes on immediately, and you're one of the 10%, so that's for sure. You definitely, as soon as you heard this idea, you immediately said, you know, that might work. I'd never heard that idea before. I like it. That might actually work. That tends to happen. And people are out there. They get excited by this when they hear it. And
thanks, Lloyd. I appreciate your time, and we'll have you back soon.
Thank you.
Good night, Lloyd.
Night.
All right, that's it for tonight. What a great show. What a powerful guest Lloyd is, and he knows his crap, folks. I mean, he knows his stuff, and if you want him to come talk to your group, find him on Facebook or go to LloydSloan.com, LloydSloan.com. He'll come and he'll enlighten your group about SRA. Get a hold of your legislator about SRA. If you learned anything here tonight, call them and educate them. Drop in and see them when they're home in the district, which is now. Let's get something moving on this SRA. Let's get something moving on this Article 5. I'm going to be back next week. We're going to talk about this some more. I think we're going to have another special guest next week. I thought we'd have a Thursday nighter this week, but again, we don't. So Tuesday night, join us at Missouri Grassroots Radio for Homefront with Cynthia Davis. Wednesday night, Lisa Payne Nager, the Culture Vigilante. And then me again, my bright and shiny voice on Saturday night with the Fair Tax Show. I'll be back again Monday night with the Hour of Truth, Article 5, The Way to Go.
God bless America,
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Check out our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.